This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Play ball! It's 30 with Murdy with your host, Sweeney Murdy.
Welcome back, everyone. 30 years ago this month, the World Series was interrupted by an earthquake, a 6.8 quake on the Richter scale that shook Candlestick Park in San Francisco about 20 to 30 minutes before the scheduled start of Game 3, what was called the Bay Bridge Series between the Giants and the A's. A portion of that bridge collapsed during this quake, and the magnitude of it wasn't immediately known to the fans in the ballpark, but as news began to spread, it became apparent that there was extensive and deadly damage across the Bay Area. The game was postponed, players and fans were sent home, and only then did people begin to get a clearer picture of exactly how much destruction had taken place. Among the reporters covering the World Series was WFAN's own Susan Waldman, who within minutes of the quake was at a working phone. Remember, no cell phones in 1989, and she was on the air with some of the first reports anywhere of what was going on. On the TV broadcast, Al Michaels and Tim McCarver had begun to preview Game 3 before managing to blurt out that an earthquake was taking place just as the TV feed cut out. Recently, I sat down with Susan to talk about the memories of that event 30 years later, her recollections of the moment and the hours and days that followed. This recording coming up is from the WFAN archives. It is from the evening of October 17th, 1989, just minutes after the earthquake hit at 8:04 p.m. Eastern Time. Susan and I listened to this clip together, and that's when our conversation began.
This is Gary Cohen in the WFAN studios. There's been a major earthquake in San Francisco. Let's go out to Susan Waldman at Candlestick Park. Susan, what's the situation there?
Okay, Gary, I'll tell you, this is as scared as I've ever been in my life. This is an earthquake here, a 6.8 on the Richter scale. This upper deck was absolutely shaking. The light stanchions were blowing back and forth. Phones have gone off. All the power is out in the city of San Francisco and in the city of Oakland. Everyone is standing around here. People in the upper deck absolutely terrified to move, not knowing what to do. There's supposed to be an aftershock. Everybody from the New York media wants me to say to everybody, we're all right so far. This is a very scary situation. Everyone is just sitting here to wait and see what happens. 6.8, they tell me, is a bad one. And I'll tell you, the guy from San Francisco was nodding his head. Oh, yeah. And right now, there definitely cannot be a game at this moment. There is no power here at all. People are just glued to their seats, not knowing where to go, because 50,000 people are not going to get out of this place all at once.
What do you think hearing that?
Boy, it's amazing, because I remember that whole situation so vividly. When I talked about it, I remember I was getting notes. We were up in the second deck, right in back of home plate, up in the second deck. That's where the auxiliary media was. If you weren't a beat writer, or you weren't a columnist that was big enough to be in the football, and I'm glad I wasn't in there in the football press box. I remember getting notes from a young lady, and they had televisions above us, and I saw them start to sway, and I looked up, and the light stanchions, as I said, were going back and forth. And what I didn't describe, I remember they had a guy up on a pole putting on windsocks on like the flagpoles, and he was holding on to that thing for dear life as it was going back and forth, and they immediately knew what it was. I had no idea, and it was us in the New York press, and the Boston press was there, and a lot of the Oakland writers were there, a lot of the columnists were there. And also what I remember is that everybody's phone went out in the whole stadium except the one I was on, and the guy next to me, whose name is Les Grobstein, who is in Chicago, and Les, every time I see him, says, you know, I've still got nail marks on my arm from when you were doing your report back there, but for some reason it did not go out, and I kept talking, and you don't know what you're going to do in that situation. And I just remember the look on the girl's face giving me the note. She knew exactly what it was. There's nothing to do. And you see the televisions going back and forth, and the press box, that was the football press box, was like down the third base line and above, which would be center the center of the football field, and it was going back and forth. I thought it was going to go over, and it never did. It was literally going at a 45-degree angle and then back. And I also remember, Sweeney, thinking, okay, it's going to collapse. I'm going to be okay because I'm going to fall the people below me. And we were thinking those things, and do you know that one seat collapsed in that whole place. Wow. The guy had just gotten up to go get a hot dog.
Wow.
And nothing collapsed at all. So if there was a place to be when there's a major earthquake in San Francisco, it was Candlestick Park.
I've heard this clip a few times before over the years. When was the last time you heard it?
Oh, years ago.
Here are the couple of questions that popped in my mind as I'm listening back to it. First of all, like how soon after the earthquake happened? The earthquake happened about 3 minutes after 8, I think, Eastern time. So how many minutes after this are you calling and reporting this to the radio station?
I was on the air. I was waiting to go on because it was 5:04. We were about to start. I was going to do updates or whatever, set the scene. There was so much going on. I was on. That clip went on for a long time. I was on the air for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And also what I remember I saw, because I remember describing the players looking for their wives and families and not mm-hmm. wanting to do. And what happened right afterwards, it went on a long time, and people were writing. And I remember one of the Oakland writers going over to Dan Shaughnessy of the Boston Globe, who was sitting there typing, and he said, how does it come out? Do we all leave? Do we all live? And it was amazing, and people were packing up and leaving. A lot of guys kept, and I was on for a very long time, and then I realized I better get out of there, and I didn't know where I was or how I was going to get back. And this was the scary part. I went downstairs. I probably was on the air. It was a really long time. I went down, and you don't know how you react, and I'm standing there, and it's totally pitch black, and there were no buses, no, mm-hmm. you know, car service, no nothing.
Yeah, can't call an Uber. This is 1989.
Can't call an Uber,
yeah.
No cell phones, right. No nothing, just my one phone. And I remember running into Ricky Henderson and his mom, Bobby, and that's when I met Bobby. And she said, go out to that side, and we talked for a while. Ricky said, well, it stopped, and why can't we play? And I remember her grabbing him and saying, we're going home. And she said, told me to go out that gate. If there's any kind of cabs, if there are, that's what. So I'm standing there all by myself, and I'm getting really nervous because I don't know anyone. There's 50,000 people there. And
it's dark now too, right?
Yes, it's dark. It's getting dark. It's mm-hmm. 6:00 mm-hmm. West Coast time. And Henry Hecht found me. I was walking. Henry Hecht wrote for the Post. He was with Newsday when I saw him, and he said, I've got a ride. Come on, come with me. And he grabbed me. And in the car is me, Ira Brickow, and Henry Hecht, and the guy driving the car, whom I have never seen before. He wrote for Newsweek. And I had never met him before, but he had a car. And I got in the back, and we're driving back, and no one knows. We can't see anything. I mean, it's dark, and there's no traffic lights, and we were driving through the Mission section then, which was not built up then. Mm-hmm. And Ira Brickow said, there's a payphone. I've got to get out. I've got to see where Dave Anderson is. So we stopped the car, and it's not a neighborhood you want to stop the car in. And guys are in line to use the payphone. And Ira Brickow, I'll never forget this, goes over to the line and says, excuse me, I'm Ira Brickow from the New York Times. I have to call my office. And these guys didn't know anything. And Henry is saying, Ira, get back in the car right now. Get back in the car. It took us probably 3 hours to get back. I was staying at one of the hotels in Union Square. And Henry was there, and we were dropped off and walking around Union Square, and there's glass everywhere, and the thing is a mess, and you see red, and that's obviously blood from something. And for some reason, when I got to the hotel, my phones didn't go out. We had no lights, but the phones at whatever
hotel, in
the hotel were there. So I called in. At that time, Steve Summers is on the air.
Okay.
Now, meanwhile, I had found Bill Madden and Marty Noble, who had cleaned out all the mini bars and all the place. And I'm telling people we're okay. because people's wives were calling in. Yeah. We're all together. We're all okay because we knew where everybody was. The people at one of the hotels, they had just had, Marty Noble was staying, the late, wonderful Marty Noble was staying at a place where they had the first electronic doors and the mini bars were electronic. And they were using crowbars to smash in the mini bars so they could get in. So because it was really scary. But I remember saying, we're all okay. We're all okay. And I listed everybody that was with us. And I went to the media hotel first. And George King, bless his little heart, from the New York Post is sitting on the curb. And they had those little, they looked like bug antlers with little green balls that had lights. Mm-hmm. And he's filing his story. And that was his light.
Wow.
And, and he's standing there and he's posted on his little word processor or whatever it was at the time. And it was really something. And the next morning, I did go to sleep. I was on a lot with Steve Summers. And a lot of people went home. I just stayed and did Cityside. I remember walking around, and I used to go get coffee at a little place on Maiden Lane, which is a very lovely little street. It was a little French place that had espresso, and she had beautiful little china. And I walked in. It was about 6 o'clock in the morning because I was going to hitchhike out to the Nimitz. And I walked over there, and everybody, no one had slept. And she was standing there, and the door was half open and not locked, and she was looking at all her china all over the place. And I remember saying, can I help you pick things up? And I did. I helped her pick up little things, and they had no electricity. She said, I'd make you coffee. But so I did that, and then I took my World Series pass, and I hitchhiked out to the Nimitz, where the thing had, and they're looking at press passes, and I showed them my World Series pass, and the cop says, yeah, go ahead. And that is where I met Dave Stewart for the first time. Dave Stewart had gotten a generator and had brought it out to where the highway collapsed and was making coffee for the policeman. And I walked around there, and the policeman had said, see that little, it was probably the size of your cell phone. It's a little piece of metal, and it was red going through it. And he said, that was a car yesterday. And they were looking for people, obviously. And and it was an awful thing. And I just watched, and that's when I became friends with Stuart, because we talked about it, and I helped him a little bit. And I went back and walked around the city and like tried to help. And I really watched them cleaning things up. And I was on FAN a lot, and I remember having a big fight and hanging up. You could do that in those days. Remember, it was pay phones? Slam the phone down like I used to do with dogs, slam. I remember one thing. This was before we had the meeting. Faye Vincent held a meeting, and it was in the St. Francis Hotel, and there were candles in the room because there was no lights. And I was with Dan Shaughnessy and some of the Boston guys, and we were walking over glass and rubble and just awful. And I remember Faye Vincent saying that, well, we're going to play this. We're going to give them a few days, but we're going to continue this, but we have to stop it for a while. And I remember one of the writers saying, yeah, that's really a good idea. Nobody wants to like be stepping over bodies going to a World Series. And I just did a lot of Cityside. I went out to the marina where I did not see Joe DiMaggio standing in line to get back into the marina in his apartment, but Bob Clappish did, and I know that he wrote about that. A lot of the guys that you'd be surprised about went home. I didn't go home.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, there was a 10-day break from when the earthquake happened to when the World Series started again. Obviously, there are newsworthy things happening there that you could stay for, but you could also, you know, 10 days away from home, that's a lot, too, when there's nothing happening. So you stayed the entire 10 days in San Francisco?
I did, indeed. We went back out. We took the BART, and that's where I also met Sandy Alderson for the first time, because we were taking the BART back and forth, Oakland to, and they had press conferences, and they were doing things, and I just went around the city, and you try and help, and you watch these people. I just fell in love.
Are you taking notes at that point? I mean, what are you doing? Are you getting audio from people with your recorder, or are you just doing what you do?
No, I'm just doing it and calling the phone. I remember having a big fight with the late Bill Mazur on the air in a couple of days, saying, well, they should be playing this because they played in the Second World War. And I remember saying to Bill, but they weren't bombing San Diego at the time. Yeah. And I remember those kinds of fights, but it was watching a city recover. I went to press conferences with councilmen and the mayor, and they were very open with everybody. And it was just you don't know what you'll do, and you just want to help people. One day, one of the writers, Kit Steer, who wrote for the Oakland Tribune, had said, you're going to have a mental breakdown. Take the day off and go in a car, go someplace. And I got on a boat and I went to Tiburon, which is by Sausalito. And I was walking in a little jewelry store, and they had been putting, and I said, oh, that's really pretty. And I told them what I was doing, and I looked, and they had some emerald green A's buttons. And he said, do you know Dave Stewart? And I said, well, yeah, I do. He said, would you give him this? I want to thank him for something. This, give this to him for his mother. A green, you know, it wasn't real emeralds, but it was beautiful. Yeah. And I said, yes, I'd love to. And Dave was really moved, and he gave it to his mom. And I said, this is, the guy who owns a jewelry store in Tiburon says, thank you for what you did. But you couldn't leave. It was, you couldn't leave. I mean, if you have any kind of reporter instinct, or if you have any kind of humanity, I want to help people, you know, I want to do what you can do. I could have gotten on a bus, I suppose, or a plane, whatever they were doing in those days.
You were covering baseball for only a few years at that point, but I have a feeling you'd visited San Francisco quite a bit over the years, hadn't you, before that? Was that some of your first?
No, I'd been there, but I was in theater.
You'd visited the city plenty of times.
Oh, I'd been at the city, but I knew the area a little bit. The other thing was, Sweeney, honestly, that was the first thing where anybody took me seriously, because I didn't leave. And I remember asking some of the, because also I had water in my hotel room. Mm-hmm. And I remember the guys came in and took showers and used the phone and all that. And it was the first time that anybody in New York ever took me seriously, the other writers. So I wasn't gonna leave. And it's just, it was something that, you know, It should be told. It should be remembered. And there's no way. I've always loved that city. I've always loved that place. And you know, I had friends that went to Berkeley, and I just loved it there. And to watch a whole community after all that death and all that destruction. One of the big, you'll know, there's a bar that I'm sure you know, you're familiar with, called the Barbary Coast, down from the St. Francis. Mm-hmm. If you had a media credential on, you could go and get free Irish coffees all day long.
Okay.
And that's what, you do know that the Irish coffee came from San Francisco. That was I learned a lot thing.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, I think the interesting thing there is that, you know, listening to some of the comments that people were saying about, you know, continuing the World Series, it was still really important for Major League Baseball, because if we think back and remember what was happening that year, that's the year that the entire year from March until August, it was the Pete Rose saga. Bart Giamatti dies 10 days later. And so this is the World Series. It's a chance for baseball to put a good face on what's been a horrible year. And then this happens in the middle of it. It was very important. They weren't insensitive to what was going on, but it was important for them to have their jewel event.
They did it correctly. They did it absolutely correctly, and they started it at the right time. I got to meet a lot of the people, and a lot of them are still there, supervisors and people from the city of San Francisco, and they wanted it to happen, but it was almost like, please just let us bury our dead, and then we'll do this. They wanted it to happen, and it also became an event, because the only thing running, don't forget, the only thing running was the BART. And that's how people got in. So you're in cars with players and executives and all these people going back and forth. And, you know, then obviously in Oakland, and I've known a lot of those Oakland players for a very long time, obviously. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you wanted to work. And I remember also when it finished, and we were out in the parking lots and I was covering it, Bobby Henderson had said, I saw him, her, so something to Ricky, and Ricky came and get me, and he said, Mom wants you to come have a drink with us. So we had a, you know, you got, you know them differently. I'd known Dennis Eckersley, obviously, for years. You know him a little differently. Dave Stewart, we've been friends forever since then. Something bonded you if you know if you were there. You know, like every now and then I'll kid George about, you know, when are you going to get another pair of those? Mm-hmm. What are they called? Like, they look like little bobble things, but it was, and people that stayed there, you're bonded together for forever. It's because it's something that it was terrifying, and how you handle it says a lot about who you are.
The ceremony before game three is 10 days after the earthquake. They have game three finally. They had a ceremony before the game that honored the first responders. And they did, you know, I'm wondering if when they did all those things back at 9/11, also the first games back, did the same types of memories come back to you when you saw what was happening on the field there versus what you saw in 89?
No, because this was something different. This was an act of God, and you can't do anything about it. And the terror went, of course, you know, I don't know about me and events like that. I was on the Bruckner and saw the second plane going into the second tower. But that's a different thing. That, you know, that first of all, that's your city. You can bond with another city and the humanity, but it's not yours.
Right.
And we all knew people. We knew policemen who weren't coming back at the stadium. We knew, I went down in 9/11, went down and played with the German Shepherds. There were 90 of them in Houston Street because they couldn't find people. So they were asking if you knew anything about Shepherds and you were good with Shepherds, would you come down so and play hide and seek with them so the dogs wouldn't go crazy? That was very different. But the first responders, it was different. I think it was almost innocent because it was an earthquake, yeah. And they've had earthquakes before. I do remember standing in some of the rubble like a jerk and be singing San Francisco like Jeanette McDonald did in the movie San Francisco, right at the place in front of the Fairmont Hotel, and you know, because that's where she was, and it was something, but it was different. An act of God is different than an act of man.
Were there any aftershocks? Did you feel anything else again the rest of the week, the 10 days you were there?
I don't remember. There were. I didn't feel them.
The other thing that stuck out to me about listening to your report, you said this is in the moments right after the earthquake hits when you're calling back, and you had a measurement. Where did you 6.8 on the Richter scale? Where did this information come from so quickly?
Boy, do I not remember that? I don't know. But the guys from San Francisco were all there, and there must have been something happened.
And it's like you weren't on Twitter.
We weren't on Twitter, and the televisions went out. So I'm not sure. You know what it is? I know what it was. A lot of the guys were talking into their offices. Les Grobstein was talking to his office in Chicago. We were the only one. How about a girl from New York and a guy from Chicago? We were the only phones that stayed in the entire thing. How about that? Yeah. Talking about an act of God. And I think it was Les who actually had gotten it from his guy in Chicago. And that's how I found out what it was.
Did games 3 and 4 feel normal? I mean, once they started up again, you know, the Giants and the A's are trying to win a World Series, and you know, the A's won it in 4 games. But did the games themselves feel normal in any way? Were the players talking about the actual playing of the games?
Not to me, they weren't normal, and I don't think, if they played them, and I think there was a lot of, I don't remember anything about the games except the team I wanted to win won, but I don't remember anything about it. I don't remember when you'd go into the clubhouses afterwards or you'd see guys on the field, no one was talking about the game.
There was no champagne celebration either. I mean, that was obviously out of respect to everybody that was there. So they again, kind of striking the right notes.
They did. I hate to put a thing on it like that, but they did a wonderful job. And they balanced, we go on with our lives, but we're going to honor. I mean, hundreds of people died. I mean, it was just an awful thing. And a lot of the city was destroyed. And to watch them put their lives back was remarkable, and they wanted to have this. I remember when the mayor came out and was talking to everyone, talked to us. I'm sure I interviewed him. I know I did, with my big Marantz that weighed 10 pounds. I remember that because they were very grateful to talk to anybody. They wanted it out there, what they were doing, and you know, and it was great. And FAN and I won an international radio award for that. And we were up against the guy who's the soccer announcer whose stands collapsed. Remember, that was the same year the stands collapsed. And yeah, it was, you don't know what you're going to do in that situation, but it was, you know, something that you don't forget that. You don't forget any of it. I don't remember the ball games. I don't. I know that Oakland won in 4, but I remember being in the days off. You could go into the clubhouses before games. Remember, you'd go out there for a workout. No one was talking about the game.
You showed me something earlier this year, 30th anniversary. Obviously, they remembered in San Francisco when you and the Yankees went out there before. You were honored by the city of San Francisco. Tell me about that.
I got a proclamation. It was two women that work for a local newspaper there who are friends with some of the councilmen. And San Francisco, you know, we usually go to Oakland, but this is where we're going to the Giants. And so they knew, the Yankees are in. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if she's still there. And one of the women who worked at one of these newspapers said, I listen all the time. She's a New Yorker. And she got everyone, they gave me a proclamation from the city of San Francisco. And it was beautiful. I was floored. And I read it. And they had all my accomplishments and helping the humanity of, the humanity was in there. That's why I've used it a lot in that proclamation. And I remember meeting some of those people. It's 30 years later, and some of them are still there. And it was beautiful. It's all, I have it framed, and it's up in my office. And they brought it to me in the booth before the game. They said, I don't want to bother you, but, and it was all in a beautiful matted form, and I got a frame for it, and it was very moving, tremendous.
I remember one of the things that the TV would tell us right away is that, you know, a section of the Bay Bridge collapsed, a portion of the Bay Bridge. Well, for fans who don't know that, you know, the Yankees obviously don't play the Giants every year, but they play the Oakland A's every year. And when you go to Oakland, you stay in San Francisco and you drive across the Bay Bridge. So I would guess that we've probably driven over the Bay Bridge a couple of hundred times in the years since then.
Right.
Does it cross your mind every single time?
No, it's a new bridge. It's gone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but it did for a long time.
Yeah.
The other thing is about that bridge. It was 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
It wasn't 2 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
So that's where a lot of the death was, right there, because remarkably there wasn't a lot in the fire down at the marina where those wonderful apartments are. The Nimitz, where the highway collapsed, a section of the highway, but that bridge. Just think about it. Just think about going over the George Washington at 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
And a lot of people were saying that because the World Series game is on the West Coast, it was starting at 5 o'clock Pacific time for television on the East Coast. They think that probably saved a lot of lives, too, because there were a lot of people already home or at the game.
That's exactly right. And if it were earlier, those people would have been coming over the bridge to go the other way, you know, from Oakland, from the East Bay, because it was Oakland. But I thought of that all the time, the time of it, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And I think the World Series, the fact that people were either home having parties or had already gotten to the park, did help save a life. Not enough, but it saved a lot of lives.
Have you ever either before or since been part of another earthquake?
No. And it's the most terrifying thing. You know, you can prepare for a hurricane, you know, a tornado, you get scared when it happens, but you know it's coming. This can come out of nowhere. What I did learn about that, and I don't know if it's the same now because the climate has obviously changed, it was very hot. I do remember bringing the wrong clothes because I did not know October is supposed to be, you know, it's fall.
Yeah.
And I remember being in a winter sweater and boots and saying, gosh, it's hot here. And I remember the girl next to the television was giving me the note saying, well, this is our summer. So when you come back again, September and October are the hottest months. And until recently, up till that time, a lot of the stuff had been when it gets really hot like that, because that's when it happened. But yeah, it was.
What's the one visual still in your mind? Like, I mean, you've given me a lot of details and obviously stories that have stayed in your mind or maybe came to mind after we started talking about this, but is there one thing in your mind where you close your eyes?
Yeah. The guy holding the windsock, the guy on a like flagpole, just holding on for dear life as the thing is going, he was going to put a windsock up there, holding on to that and the policeman showing me the car. It was as big as my hand.
My thanks to Susan Waldman for sharing her thoughts and memories about the events of October 1989. The Oakland A's finished the World Series in a 4-game sweep of the Giants. Dave Stewart was named the series MVP. Oakland returned to the World Series the next year, swept by the Cincinnati Reds, and they have not been back to the World Series since. The Giants did not return to the World Series until 2010, when they won the first of 3 World Series championships in the decade. If you've missed any of our recent episodes of the 30 with Murdy podcast, please go back and check them out at the radio.com archive. Recent episodes include conversations with Ron Swoboda about the 69 Mets and with Kent Tekulve about the 1979 We Are Family Pittsburgh Pirates. Make sure to subscribe and review at radio.com, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you for listening, and until next time, I'm Sweeney Murdy.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.